situation here, like I said, again, the story is about David and Goliath we're looking at, but I want to go beyond just the evangelical story of like, okay, what is your Goliath, slay your Goliath, whatever else. Because if you look at the story, it's actually a story about being God-centered and a God perspective, having a God-centered perspective of things in life, okay? First point, as we said earlier, is in verses 1-11, is beware of what? Looking only at appearances. And we're going to see, if you only look at appearances, it's going to lead to fear, okay? Verses 1-11, if you look at the first three verses, we're going to see the situation. And also the geographical location, what's going on. Could I have a happy motivated reader read verses 1, 2, and 3? Wendy, could you read verses 1? Victor, could you read verse 2? And then Ben Chung, read verse 3.
Okay. Now the Philistines gathered their army together in battle and were gathered at Soko, the strong of Judah. They camped between Soko and Azekah and
all these names. Okay, good. Thank you. Okay, thank you so much. So when we read the story here, now for us, usually in beginning story, you want to begin with a good introduction, right? Yes? But then you read the Bible, there's like genealogy. What's that going? But that's something else, okay? That's what, if you're Jewish, it would excite you because you're looking this whole time for the Messiah. The same thing in the story here, we could look at all these places and be like, yeah, like what is all these places? Elijah, blah, 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 whatever else, okay? And we think we're just speaking in tongues just reading this, okay? But if you read carefully, I think there's a lot more going on. What is going on here? What event is taking place here? About to take place? A battle, okay? An epic battle. It's the middle of a war. Pay attention. By the way, for us, we miss it because we don't live there anymore. But it mentioned all these places for the Jews who know their geography. I want to call attention if you're looking over here. There's a Philistine army ready for battle in verses 1. But if you look at verses 2, pay attention to where they're at. It actually says all these places, you might say, oh, I don't know. But I think one thing we could know is it's now at a battle where the Philistine army is meeting at in an area that belongs to what? J word. The tribe of what? Judah, okay? So what does that mean? The Philistine army is already in Israel what? Territory, okay? Think about this, right? I don't want to get too political, but remember there was a caravan that was marching towards the border, right? Think about something like that. Except this time it's like fully militant, okay? They're now already at the border, at your state, Judah, like a tribe or area, right? Okay. By the way, this is where this takes place is actually 12 to 14 miles away from Bethlehem. Bethlehem, we just remember earlier, Ben Trump taught. Bethlehem is the town of what? Where who came from?
Jesus.
Jesus, okay. And also where, before Jesus, there was David, okay? David, who is just anointed, okay? Very good, thank you for sharing, right? Which, of course, later, Jesus would come from that. By the way, I think that's a purposeful, intentional thing of being a typology of David, Jesus would fulfill later on, okay? We're waiting a little bit to show you the pictures, okay? But here in verses 12 to 14, this is 12 to 14 miles. By the way, if the Jewish army gets defeated, what would happen? Do you think what would happen? The gateway would be open for the Philistines to what? Rape, pillage, and murder. From their odd way to where? Little Bethlehem, okay? So in this story, notice, by the way, in the context, we've just seen the next king just get anointed. And we're already wondering, okay, what's going to happen with the old king? What's going to happen with the new king? And now, suddenly, with all these dilemma and questions, now we introduce a bigger problem in life. There's a battle going on. By the way, isn't this so true in life sometimes? We get hit by one thing after another, right? You know, when you focus on this the main thing, like, boom, something else hits us. Like, oh, wow, okay? So this is what's going on, okay? This is a very dangerous thing. If you only look at this, it will lead you to what? Despair, okay? Let's go on. Now we know where this thing is situated at. It's a very dire situation. But we're going to be looking at verses 4 to 7. You're going to see, we're going to want to consider Goliath's appearance, okay? By the way, if you only consider Goliath's appearance, it could really be despairing, okay? Which is supporting our main point that if you only look to appearance only, without looking at God, it's going to be a problem. It's going to lead to what? Despair and to fear. Look with me in verses 4 to 7. If I could have Noel read me verses 4, Eric read me verse 5, Sarah verse 6, and Miss Burton verse 7.
Helmet on his head, and he was clothed with a mail, which weighed
5,000 samples of bronze.
And you have bronze armor on your flank and a bronze javelin between your shoulders.
And the shaft of his spear was like a weaver's beam. His spear's head weighed 600 shekels of iron, and a shield bearer went before him.
Okay, so if you look at this, there's a lot of impressive facts about Goliath here, okay? If you only look at the appearance, it could lead you to be pretty, what, frightened, okay? Now, I know we often hear the story of David and Goliath, who right away picture David winning. But that was not set in stone in the beginning, okay? In the beginning of the story, put this in context. There's actually 9 impressive facts about Goliath here, okay? 9 impressive facts. We didn't even hear him talk yet, okay? We're going to see that later on. But we're going to just see his mere appearance. It's already something. If you only look at appearance, it's going to be very frightening if you don't look towards God. Impressive fact number 1. I think all your version of verses 4 says he was a champion, yes?
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I would have translated this term probably a little different, but I think I understand what they're trying to do, okay, in English. This Hebrew word only appeared once in the scripture, but appears a lot in other writings, in the Dead Sea Scroll. They wrote a lot about war and stuff like that. It actually just means soldier, infantryman, okay? But I think why they translate it as champion is, hey, why are we looking at one infantryman only? And also, he's pretty impressive. That's why we see this term, okay? So, point number 1, what's impressive, is he's a man of war. Think about this as a civilian. If you're civilianized, you're seeing this guy as an enemy, and here's a man of war, right? He's already, what, pretty frightened. I remember as a little kid one time, this watching man had to come through our house, and I was a little kid looking out. I was like, wow, it looked pretty impressive, right? You see all their battle rattle and everything else going, looking for somebody, okay? So, in the same way, think of this. This is Goliath. He's a champion. He's appearing, okay? Impressive fact number 2. Impressive fact number 2 says, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. Okay? For us, we would say 6 cubits and a span. What is that? Okay? So we need to translate this into modern ease. Okay? So what does it mean today in today's measurement? You know how tall is 6 cubits and a span? By the way, before we even look at that, I think if we saw what Ben Chung has noted earlier, the book of 1 Samuel has this thing about heights. Okay? I don't know what it is. Maybe Samuel has a small man complex. He just noticed everything about height, okay? So, the first Samuel, there's a lot of intentional focus and observation of the height of characters. We saw earlier in first. Let's turn real quick to 1 Corinthians 10:23. If I could have Will, would you be able to read 1 Samuel 10:23. 1 Samuel 10:23. Yeah, I'm all over the place. I'm saying 1 Kings, 1 Samuel, 1 everything, except 1 Samuel itself, right? Well, 1 Corinthians. But 1 Samuel 10:23.
Then they ran and searched him from there. And when he stood among the people, he was taller than any of the people from the shoulders upward.
Okay. So this is like, there's studies done. I actually read the study before that a lot of CEOs are pretty tall. Okay. They're like 6 feet or more. Actually, most of those presidents are taller. Are tall, like 6 feet and above, okay? Obama, Trump, right? All of them are pretty tall, okay? So, I think we're drawn to tall people as what? Leaders, okay? This is true back then, so you can say, superficial. No, our world is the same today, okay? So my probability of being a CEO is shortened, okay? So, going back on, with this 1 Corinthians 10:23, right? There's a focus of height. Now, the question I think we ask ourselves is, and by the way, didn't we just saw the last chapter? The issue is also about height, remember? Not judging by appearance, Eliab, remember? Remember that name Eliab, his oldest brother. It will appear again in the story, okay? But here we see, how tall is Goliath? He's actually, in our modern mathematics, is actually 9.5 feet tall. Okay, you guys want to know how tall is 9.5 feet? Rebecca and Evan, you guys know how tall 9.5 feet? This is where when we usually do our homeschool lesson, you know, the girls get excited because we bust out the measuring tape and we pull it all out. We have Abigail hold one end, Rebecca hold one end, and then we put it in place and then we do comparison with different animals at different heights, okay? But since we don't have measuring tape, what we will do instead is, Victor, could you stand up? I'll try you, Victor. So you have Jimmy? Whoa, that's kind of offensive. Am I that short? Am I 4.5 feet?
Not quite. I think it's like a 1.5 of Victor.
So Victor is 6 feet. Then let's add Emily. If Emily could be on your shoulder. And Emily, if you could hold the... right there. Emily, could you also reach your hand up like that? Like this, okay? Hold the stuffed animal all the way up like this. Like this.
All the way up.
Oh. Yeah. Don't be afraid. Your dad is very strong. Yeah, okay. Thinking, that's how tall he is, okay? The average Jewish guy was probably 5 feet more, five, which is like here, okay? So could you imagine I fight Emily? That tall. There's like a size difference, right? This is like a very tall NFL player. Is Yao Ming 9 feet? I don't
know.
Okay, here's Shanna, okay? So you guys get the idea that this is very impressive, okay? So impressive fact number three is Goliath, two, was his height, okay? What's his height? Not only that, we also see... Oh, that's yours. Oh, that's, you could eat too, okay? So you get to pay attention and calm down, okay? So impressive fact number three is he had what kind of helmet on?
Bronze,
okay? By the way, if he wore a helmet, did he look even taller?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay? In the day and age back then, not necessarily every soldier had a helmet, okay? Today, if a soldier goes to war with no helmet, it's like they write to their congressman, that kind of thing, okay? But here we see he wore a helmet, okay? And it was made out of what?
Bronze.
Bronze, which is, by the way, this is the Bronze Age, so what do you think? Is bronze a precious metal? It's like the cutting edge metal of their day, okay? So this is guy is putting like tier one material, right? Think of like special forces, like the Navy SEALs, they have those crazy thing that like other soldiers don't have. This is what they have. He's like tier one. He's like steel status, okay? This is what he has with him, okay? So he wears a bronze helmet on his head, and impressive fact number four, verses five, he was clothed with scaled armors, which weighed how much weight? 5,000 shekels, by the way, made out of what?
Bronze,
okay? So the second time you see bronze mentioned. How much is 5,000 shekels in modern speak? Earlier this year, I was in another country, and there was this guy. He had the name Andrew. So to distinguish him from Pastor Andrew and him, they call him the Scottish Andrew, okay? Because he's from Scotland. He married a local in that country. But then we were talking about weight. I don't know why we were talking about weight. And he talked to me as like, you know, oh, I weigh 3 stones or something like that. I was like,
right.
3 stones? What kind of stones? And I realized, oh, he's doing what?
British.
Yeah, the British thing. And then he's like, oh, you're doing imperial. I was like, no, I'm not imperial. I'm American. I realized, oh, yeah, it's the old school ways of everything else like that, okay? So what does all mean in our modern speak in America? What is it to, how much is the weight of 5,000 shekels? It's actually 126 pounds.
Oh, my.
So his armor alone is 126 pounds, okay? I used to teach his Bible study in the Marines. And I remember in Iraq, we were so bored, they would always come, hey, can we do some Bible study? Could you do that same story about David again? Because every time we get to this point, we were like, how much is one, I would always ask the guys, how much is 126, like equivalent to our weapon, or, you know, anything we know? And some of the guys, because we had to memorize all these crazy facts, like, oh, that's like our 50 cal machine gun, that's 121 pounds. I was thinking, no, this thing is even heavier, 126 pounds, okay? Which is what I weighed in Iraq back then, was 125 pounds, and they'll always laugh, okay? So that's a lot, okay? Which to me is crazy. This guy's armor is 126 pounds, which is my whole weight. Going to Iraq, everything that I wore besides myself was 80 pounds, okay? And this guy was even more. This guy was 120, this is just his armor, not including his sword and whatever, battle rattle pouch, whatever else with that, okay? So here we see, this guy is impressive, okay? 126 pounds. I mean, this guy, you can just throw his thing, weapon, to some people like me, and it was, you're already floored. You feeling me? This guy, I mean, his armor is already a weapon, right? You can imagine he doesn't like somebody, boom, just smashing the head, and it's like, you know, this guy is just like Arnold times two, whatever else, okay? So, impressive fact number five, he had bronze greaves on his legs, okay? Apparently, he's so tall, I think he also emphasized that he needs armor, right? Because if someone were just to pierce him, just eye level, it's probably his feet. So he had, what, bronze greaves. And whatever else that comes with, okay? Again, this is the third time this mentioned, okay? By the way, if you're noticing thus far, he's dressed to what? Dressed to, not impressed, but dressed to what? Say, mess of the best, I like the rest, okay? You feeling me? But yeah, dressed to impress, okay? But that's what he is. He's dressed to say, hey, mess of the best, I like the rest, okay? Everything he has is armor, okay? Is bronze armor, okay? He's his own tank, okay? So if you note, it goes on, it says that his shaft of his spear was like what? A weaver's beam. Impressive fact number eight, moving on, is the head of a spear. You guys know how much it weighs? It says 600 shekels of iron. You know how heavy that is? That's 15 to 16 pounds, okay? When I was in the Marines, our rifle was 8 pounds, okay? our machine gun 240 was usually 16 pounds, and that's heavy. But nobody uses a 16 pound machine gun 240 Glock. And says, oh, there's an enemy! Rah, just throw that and chuck it at them, right? But this is what he has. That's his spear. His throwing spear was. I mean, this is just craziness. What's going on here? Okay. And impressive fact number 9, he had also what? A bodyguard. Okay. A shield carrier that walked before him. Okay. You know, he's like, rah, it's so big. Oh, but then, you know, this lower part, he has someone else protecting, right? I mean, this guy's like a chariot, okay? He has his own, just like a chariot back then would have a spearman, a person with
a javelin.
Like, usually chariots back then had 3, like, and a guy that carries a shield that kind of deflects everything to protect the driver and everything else, right? Here is he is. By the way, also sometimes kings have this also as well. So apparently this guy's pretty impressive, okay? If you look at this in the middle of the battle, would you really want to meet this guy? There's some characters in the Bible you don't want to ever meet in a dark alley. Goliath is one of them. I don't ever want to meet in a dark alley. If you do, you want to run away, okay? So, this is what he looks like for the little kids, okay? Look at what is he doing. What is his face? What is his face doing? Rebecca and Abigail, what is his face doing? Do you guys see? What is Goliath's face doing? Is it a nice face? Is he saying,
no.
Hi, you know, come again? Is that what it is? No, right?
No.
He's like, rawr, okay? He says, tonight we dine in Fallbrook, California, right? That's the kind of face that he has, okay? With this, okay? So, let's consider now his speech in verses 8 to 10. Verses 8 to 10. Oh, man, I need to pick up the pace, okay? 8 to 10, he speaks words of arrogance. There's a lot of pride, yes? He speaks, and he's very confident. He says, hey, put your best one-on-one battle, okay? And then he said, he's so arrogant that he will win. He says, hey, if this whole battle I win, that means you guys have to surrender, okay? This is like the UFC fight of the century, okay? Where this one fight determines the whole course of the history. This is how much he throws it down, okay? Look at the result. Verses 11. Saul, by the way, was taller and head taller than everyone else. Look at verse 11. When Saul and all Israel heard these words of the Philistines, they were dismayed and were greatly, what? Afraid, okay? So they saw this guy and he's like, oh, very impressed. Oh no, we're really now depressed or stressed or distressed or whatever else you have with that, okay? This is what happens when you look at what? Jesus, okay? So you see here, this is what happens. I think as application, when we are in this difficult situation in our life, I hope we don't look just only at our situation. But I think we have to ask our question. Have you considered a God-centered perspective in interpreting your problems and also your challenges and your obstacles, okay? Second question, do you realize that only looking at your situation can lead you to despair? I think sometimes knowing is half the battle, okay? I don't know if you guys have this. I usually, when I'm a negative thought, I can go down the road to despair, and I don't know, it goes all the way down to down at the basement, right? But I think sometimes realize, oh no, I know this pattern of my thinking, and it always leads to really negative. I think sometimes knowing is half the battle. It's like, oh, okay, I need to be careful when I'm starting. Now I need to stop this, and also evaluate this biblically. I don't want the result that when we go down this road, okay? Finally, as a third application question, in your trials, I think it's important to ask, have you looked at the Lord? Have you truly trusted Him in His ways? Not just trusting in God to change your circumstance, but to trust Him even going through the circumstance, okay? So let's look at now point number 2. Point number 2 is, the first one is, A, looking at your circumstance lead to despair. Point number 2 is this, consider God's providence in the small things. Point number 2 is, consider God's providence in the small things, okay? Consider God's providence a small thing. This is found in verses 12 to 23. Could I have a happy, motivated reader read out loud with big boy voice, big live voice, verses 12?
Now David was the son of the Ephrathite Bethlehem in Judah, whose name was Jesse, and he had 8 sons, and Jesse was old in the days of Saul, advanced in years.
I love how verses 12 begins. Remember, we just left with an epic battle scene, right? It's like the scene from 300, from all those war movies and everything. It's like there's a guy's rah rah, you know, kill one, kill them all kind of thing. He's all this, mess with the best, I like the rest. He's all there, right? And then all of a sudden, the scene just abruptly changed. You're thinking, oh, King Saul, he's tall and he's also in like depressed, right? And he's also in awe, right? What do we do now? And then all of a sudden, the focus is on young little David, who earlier was not even impressive enough by his dad. His own dad didn't consider him even a candidate, okay, for being voted who's going to be the next king of Israel, right? That didn't even happen. Now, all of a sudden, they start talking about things that are very domestic. If you're reading this, you'll be like thrown off, like, okay, what happened to the other scene? Why are we looking at a very domestic scene? In fact, if you look in verses 12 to 13, it's suddenly focused on family history, right? This is like the... I wonder if you guys ever happened to someone who's in the middle of telling a great story and someone just interrupts with some point that has nothing to do with the story. Right? If this is exactly like that, you're like, wait a minute. Why are we talking about David? Why are we talking about David had 8 sons, suddenly? Why are we talking about Jesse, oldest sons? Why are we talking about this? Okay, yes, all of Israel's fighting, but now it's telling about, oh, you know what? David wasn't in the battle, but David's 3 older brothers is, okay? It almost becomes like, why? This is the small affair in the big scheme of things. In fact, I think this is what's important. Because verses 4 to 23, you're going to see that God focuses on the small things. Okay? Sometimes in the big scheme of things, I think we can lose... we could be thinking, we think we're trying to focus on the big picture, not realizing that God is working often in what? Small things. We often say, we only look at God only when He does big things, but in often, even the story, in fact, actually, if you look at verses 12 to 23, it's even longer than the actual description of David's battle with Goliath. When you really look at it, it's really not detailed. Actually, if you look at it compared to the rest of ancient Near East, like all the surrounding neighbors of Israel, they have very gory stories of conquering an enemy. When you look at the Bible, it's rated G, okay, for godliness, or not, almost goreless compared to everything else, okay? But I think the emphasis is this: God is actually working in the small things. And we as Christians need to realize, even when the big struggles in life, we need to see that God's working in the big things. So when we see this guy, Goliath, he's all scary, we need to see the small things that God's already working, even in things that we think is not related. As you see in the story, it says David was the youngest. And then verses 17, right? Jesse said to David what? To go to bring his brother what? Verse 17. Grain. Yeah. And 10 loaves of bread, right? So it's almost so mundane. Like, why would I have to mention 10 loaves of bread? Right? Like, it's just so random, okay? Again, people could allegorize things. What are those 10 things? Oh, it's the 5 points of Calvinism and the 5 solas. No, that's a crazy way of application, okay? Do not allegorize that, okay? And say something crazy like that. I think it's emphasizing is the details. Like, small little details. Could you imagine reading this? We're probably annoyed. Like, okay, why would I... Most of us would probably read this and not even notice, hey, it says 10 loaves of bread. But could you imagine even for David how more annoying it could easily be? Like, your brother's off to war and he says, hey, go bring 10 mangto to your brother, right? It's almost like, what is that? What is that? 10 small, you know, plain bread, okay? Bring 10 bread over, okay? So God, I think, is working even in the providential things, in the small things. In fact, it's going to be all these small things add up, right? David is so young. He's watching the sheep. God's using that time in the sheep, right? Training him. And now, like, he's far away. He's in Bethlehem, 12 miles away, 12, 14 miles. And now the dad says, hey, go bring some bread. So then brings him to the battle scene, okay? And it says when he gets there, right, he's in the camp. And then he's there and everything else. But then when he gets there, guess what happened? He hears what? The Philistine, Goliath, what? Talk trash, okay? And in this case, it's been going on for 40 days. David has been talking trash, okay? His Rick Warren book, if you read Rick Warren's 40 Days of Purpose or Purpose Driven Life, he'll say, yeah, I have 40 Days of Purpose. In 40 days, he's mocking these guys, right? But now, in God's providence, a small thing, he just mocked God a little too much one day. One day, he mocked, and this is his downfall, finally here. Notice the story here is where the all small things. By the way, if you look at the story here, I think it's fascinating. Because in the back of your mind, you're thinking, dun, 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 Goliath is a threat. 12 to 14 miles away. And here's this old man, like, okay, bring food over. I hope my kid doesn't starve. You're thinking, I could easily picture, you know, typical dad and mom, right? Just like when I was in Iraq, you know, we have focus on everything, but our mom is worried about what? Sending care packages. Are you cold and everything? I remember Eric's mom sent me, like, you know, an extra shirt and everything else. It's like, you know, bring food and everything because we cared about the food. For us, it was like, man, we only eat one meal a day, right? It's so hot, we could care less about eating because there's other bigger things and everything else, right? But of course, typical parents, concerned, loving their kid. Oh, let's pack the 3 brothers. Let's pack Eliab Lunchables for today, right? And it's almost like these guys are going to war. They're seeing this thing. They're not eating. They're like, man, this guy is talking. Look at this guy. Like, I have no appetite, right? And here it is coming over, bringing this. And this dad doesn't even probably know, 12, 14 miles away, back in the day with no Twitter and everything. Doesn't even know, like, oh, man, the threat is really real. He probably didn't know about Goliath, right? And here, little David comes over, man, why am I carrying someone's lunch? At least I'm going to go see the battle scene, right? He drops everything else, and this is what it is. If you look at the story, I love how it is, in verses 12 to 14. because it's like there's focus on David, but there's always a reminder, hey, Goliath, right? Look at 12 to 15 focus on David's family life. But notice in verse 16, it doesn't even, by the way, it's so insulting that narrative, he doesn't even call him Goliath. He calls him that Philistine, right? Almost like an insult, right? Like how people today say dirty Jew, whatever else, right? Okay? So it says Philistine, okay? Then again, it's back to David. Oh, the dad says, oh, bring some mantle over, verses 17, 18, right? And then you're thinking, what is going on? There's an enemy, there's Goliath. And then back to the Philistines in verses 19, okay? It's almost this tension of saying, okay, day-to-day life, there's a battle. Day-to-day life, battle. Right? Day-to-day, and then you go on, verses 20 to 22, oh, David arrives, right? He's there, he's bringing all the Lunchables and everything else. He's ready to give a picnic for his brother. And you're thinking, what's going on? Verse 23, the Philistine talks. And now for the first time, the Philistine and David meets. And David hears this mockery of this man. And God's going to use the small providence of this small, mundane, everyday, very normal thing happening to say God's going to use a small providence of bringing about His will. My brothers and sisters, the application, we need to realize God works through the small things, yes? Mm-hmm. Sometimes we think, okay, sometimes the best thing to do when there's a lot of things going on, we don't know what to do. The right thing is just to do the focus on the small. Faithful in little, faithful in what? Much, okay? Isn't that a principle Jesus taught? Mm-hmm. Yes, okay? So let's go back on. By the way, we should draw comfort from the fact that God is sovereign, is providential, okay? I know there's a dark side of Calvinism, like, oh, how does it all mean? What about the reprobates and everything else? But I think there's also a sense of God's comfort. Okay, no, hey, if He is sovereign, if you truly have trust in Him, He will grow you. Even when you say, I want to rebel, He's going to discipline, He's going to grow you and stretch you, that kind of thing. But trust in the sovereignty of God. There's no loose maverick in this world, Adam, okay? God is in control of all things. Things God might permit, kind of like what you talked about earlier with the evil spirit, but at the same time, God is in control, okay? Let's go on to point number three, okay? Considering God's honor, name, more than anything else. Oh man, what to leave in, what to leave out. We're almost short on time now, okay? So, we're going to go Cliff Notes version from the rest of the time. Verses 24 to 27, we've seen the main point is consider God's name more than anything else. I would actually say this is the main point of the story. If you read everything else, it can be very man-centered. But this is the crux of the story. Look with me at verses 26. Could I have a happy motivator read me out loud? Big boy or big girl voice, verses 26. When you look at verse 26, I think this is pretty amazing. This is pretty amazing. David asked two questions. You guys catch that? He just heard this Philistine making fun of God, mocking everything. In fact, he now says, hey, what is going on? Is anyone going to take care of this guy? Is anyone going to take this guy out or what? Okay? Is anyone going to go one shot, one kill with this guy? Okay? So here he's like wondering. But notice the second question. I think his second question is pretty cool. What is this? I mean, it's kind of insulting. Okay. By the way, one thing I noticed here, David could talk smack just as good as Goliath, okay? He says, who is this uncircumcised Jew, right? Uncircumcised Philistine, okay? Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should taunt the army of the living God, okay? For the first time in this narrative, you see the word God appears. This whole time, there's no mention of God. By the way, the only person that talks about God this whole time is who? Besides the mockery of Goliath, is who? Is David. No one else. King Saul, he's forgotten about God. Everyone else in the story, no one's talking about God. He asked this question, and then even when the people respond, the soldiers respond, they didn't talk anything about God. They're like, oh, this is the rewards if you kill him, okay? By the way, this is the first time you've seen the Bible David talks. I think it's significant. The very first time he talks, he's focusing on who? On God, okay? And by the way, he mentioned about, A, Goliath. What is Goliath's problem that he has? Is he's taunting the living God. He's not saying, hey, he's taunting our army. Look at how impressive our army is, right? You know, look at how good the Marine Corps is. Wait, are you seriously going to talk about the Marine Corps? No, that's not what he is. He's about the glory of who? Not about the soldiers, not about the army, not about the country, but the glory of the living God, okay? And by the way, the word taunt repeats a lot in the story, 6 times in different ways. Whether it's the word taunt, mock, defy, whatever else, okay? Appears in this chapter, okay? So there's a focus. And by the way, he's so focused on this, he brings it up later when he talks to others. And he also, when he talks to the king, says, hey, the reason why I want to do this is because I can't stand this guy taunting God. In other words, he cares about the name of God, the glory of God, before anything else, okay? He's motivated by that, okay? He cares about the glory of God more than anything else with all this. This is what moves him to say, I'm going to defend the glory of God. Okay? By the way, because he's God-centered, he's grieved to see God's name being profaned. It's what moves him to say, I'm not going to be despaired and look at this situation. Does that make sense? He sees something else more problematic than Goliath, than an army meeting there. He's saying, what about God's glory? Okay? And does God honor that?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, okay? God honors that, okay? I think we're going to go quicker here with this. The fourth point is we need to be aware of those who disdain trusting in the Lord. Before this big battle, one of the things I like about reading history, in fact, earlier this week I was reading, I feel as a pastor I need to read things besides theology, just to exercise my brain. Another day, it's like people working out, right? The people that never work legs day, they kind of look funny. Okay, it's like almost like, oh, what's going on, right? Same thing, I think also just sort of be more well-rounded, not just only reading the Word of God. It's also history, okay? I was just reading about the Battle of Waterloo with Napoleon, okay? One of the things I like reading about a lot of military history is sometimes we always think they're so good, so glorious, but if you read the history, sometimes it's a lot of providence, okay? As great as generals are, sometimes it's like these last-minute things, like, whoa, we didn't see this enemy coming this way, uh-oh. And then just God's providence, just the right moment at the right time with people, no matter how smart it is, okay? I bring this to say in the story is the same way. Before David faced Goliath, did you guys realize he faced a lot of other challenges before that? In fact, you could almost say he faced three Goliaths. What I mean by that is this. Right away when he gets over there, how does his brother feel? What did his brother say? Okay, turn with me real quick. If you guys are with me in verses, we're picking up now in verses 28 onwards. The first person, the first Goliath, so to speak, the first enemy he faced is really his own what? Kin, his own brother. Verses 28. Eliab, his older brother, by the way, remember earlier?
Mm-hmm.
Saul thinks this is the one, okay? You know, I know sometimes there's reality TV shows where people are like in nice fancy houses like this and they say, who's the bachelor or who's the one, or, you know, big brother or whatever else. When you say, who's going to be the next king of Israel? The brother stands, everyone's, oh, he's going to be most popular voted. And it turns out, no. How do you think he feels?
Slighted.
He sees this. Yeah. By the way, don't forget, he's just been anointed as the next king. He should know better. Hey, if this guy says he's going to do something, maybe it is God's going to use him. But instead, verse 28, he's like, he heard David say, hey, who is this guy that mocks God? And he says for him, says what? He's like upset, okay? He's saying, he's angry with him. Hey, why do you come down? You just only want to see battles, okay? You just want to spend all day watching YouTube battles, okay? That's what he was saying, you know? And he says, I know your heart. By the way, does he really know the heart? Isn't it so ironic? The last chapter, God says, only God looks at the heart. And this guy's presumption says, I know your heart. You just want to hear just to see battles so you don't do anything all day. So you don't have to work. So you could watch a free, you know, scene while you're eating popcorn and Monto or whatever else, okay? So here it is. He's making fun of him, okay? And now David says, hey, what are this is classic older brother, younger brother, right? David's like, what are you talking about, right? I love that. Verses 31, okay? Why is it not even close? Why can't he even speak, okay? So that's his first person saying, hey, who are you, you little peon kind of thing, right? Then notice he talks to King Saul. Does King Saul think he's really qualified?
No,
right? King Saul is thinking, he has the mindset of what? Goliath, right? Remember Goliath had all these fancy battle rattles and everything else? And in the same way, Saul's like, hey, look at you, you're just a shepherd boy. Let's put this helmet on you. Oh, it's too big, okay? Let's put this all on you, okay? All these things, okay? When I went to Iraq, I remember wearing a gas mask, because most guys are really big. I wear an extra small gas mask. They did not have extra small gas masks. So then, my sergeant would always yell at me every week, go to supply. Every week I go to supply, and they'll never have that. So by the time we went to Iraq, I remember the supply officer says, oh, if you don't have it now, I guess you have to trust in God, okay? So here it is. He's putting, I could imagine wearing it. I remember going to gas chamber, it didn't work. And they always say, hey, devil dog, how come you don't know how to put that on? And I'll be, no, it's just too big. You guys don't have my, whatever else, okay? And, you know, I'll be wearing it. It'll look like what? I'm wearing my daddy's uniform, right, with a big gas mask and everything else, okay? Here he is. I can imagine here's David wearing all these things and wearing Saul's thing. And Saul's like, hey, he's thinking the mindset of Goliath. Put all these things and it would not what? Work, okay? So then, notice that's his second opposition. Finally he meets who? Finally he meets King Saul, okay? By the way, if you notice the story, there's not emphasis on the battle scene, okay? The actual battle. If you actually look with the story here, there's the emphasis is actually on the story is what? On what David says when he finally meets Goliath. He faces, in other words, three battles with three individuals, mentally, whatever, all that, before he finally faces Goliath, okay? By the way, he's not focusing on self-confidence. He's focuses on what? Confidence in the Lord, okay? If you look at this narrative here, okay? If you look at this narrative that we see in this battle, you look at verses 41 to... if you look here in verses 44 to 47 is the actual battle, is the speech before he battles him. And the actual battle is in verses 48 to 49. Question, which one is longer? David's speech to Goliath or the actual account of David's battle with Goliath? I did the number search through a commentary. Apparently it's longer, not only because it's three verses, David's speech is longer than David's action. So the focus is not even the battle of David, okay? It's actually focusing on theology about God. If you actually do the word count in Hebrew, David's speech is actually 63 Hebrew words. How many Hebrew words? 63. David, actual combat narrative is only 36, okay? It's only 36 words, accounting of the actual battle, okay? So it's inversion, 63 versus 36. I think there's maybe a poetic thing that's going on here, okay? So in other words, there's a focus on the theology. He's saying, hey, God should not be mocked, okay? In fact, what does he say? David says, is he coming armed with sword and everything else? No, he comes armed with who? The living who? Okay? The living God, okay? I love this, okay? So his speech says, you know what? I don't come with you, with any sword. God, verses 47, you know, all the assembly may know that the Lord does not deliver by sword or spear. Right? He's saying God doesn't need your sword and spear. Oh yeah, your sword is impressive, your spear. But what, God will come as God himself. And he's saying God's going to have it. Is that true?
Wow.
When he kills him in verses 50, okay, I know wars are brutal, okay? ISIS is not the first one to invent head chopping. Verses 50, David prevailed with a sling and stone, right? Intentional weapon. There's no sword and what? No sword and spear. In fact, when he goes down, verses 51, David ran and stood over the Philistine. Right? He stands over triumphantly, okay? Verses 51, on his forehead, okay? I know it's a little bit gory, okay? And the stone sank in his forehead. But notice when he comes down to chop his head, he doesn't have a sword. So he needed to borrow whose sword? He needed to borrow David's sword, okay? To chop off his head, okay? Which is, I think, poetic justice going on here, okay? God ought not to be mocked. There will be sometimes, in some moments, poetic what? Justice that occur. Does that make sense here? So you see here, honoring God, putting God first. But also I think the lesson we need to have is this. We need to honor the Lord. Sometimes the people, we might not necessarily face Goliaths. I don't think we necessarily face Goliaths every day. Someone's going to persecute us and want to kill us and all the nation. But we face a lot of Eliab, yes, in our day-to-day life, of questioning, hey, why are you doing all this for the Lord? Questioning our motives. Or maybe even also as well a lot of Sauls. Say, you know what? Why are you trusting the Lord so much? Let's be practical. Let's be real. Okay? Let's be real. Let's not necessarily pour in all our money to serve the Lord's cause. Let's not put in all the hours to serve the Lord with our strength and everything else. Let's give God second best. But know what we see in the story here is we need to be diligent and vigilant in making sure we honor God first. Okay? So with this, I think...